The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian Football Weekly in association with Josimar. Today we discuss the story of FIFA and the presidential campaign of the Trinidad and Tobago FA in 2019. What happened when a former secondary school teacher, William Wallace, got elected? Why did the FA replace him just 3 months later? And what happened when FIFA were taken to court? And why does it all matter? We'll hear from William Wallace about his legal campaign against FIFA, and we'll speak to former Trinidad and Tobago goalkeeper Shaka Hislop, now a pundit who's worked in football administration for both his national FA and FIFA. It's an interesting story. It requires a little bit more concentration than Barry's cut-and-paste answer on Newcastle United, but hopefully it'll be worth it. This is The Guardian Football Weekly. Joining me, as always, for these important, serious, holding my hand through these pods is Philippe Auclair. Hey, Philippe.
How are you, Max?
I'm very good, thanks. So first of all, why is this story important? Without swearing, please.
There's been this conflict between the Trinidad and Tobago Football Association and FIFA since the month of March 2020, when the TTFA, that's what it's called, was actually subjected to what is called a normalization order, which means basically it was told, well, you can't run your affairs anymore. FIFA is going to choose some people who are going to run your affairs because you're not able to do that for yourselves. But the people in Trinidad and Tobago refused to bow to this decision and challenged the decision in their high court and won. Then they lost on appeal, which is a story we're going to hear. And it's absolutely crucial for several reasons. First of all, to understand that in the world of football, there is no such thing as a small nation or a small problem. Because if you think about it, Max, there are 211 members of FIFA. Each of these 211 members has a vote when it comes to choose the president. The voice of Trinidad and Tobago is just as important as the voice of Brazil or England. So you cannot have people rebelling like this. CONCACAF, the confederation to which Trinidad and Tobago belongs, has got 35 FIFA members. That's three times as many as, almost, as South America, CONMEBOL. You wouldn't think that. You would think, oh yes, but the Caribbean weighs more in terms of power than the whole of South America. So therefore, you cannot, if you're FIFA, if you want to keep control on things, you cannot possibly have too much disobedience, perhaps. Basically, people not doing what they're told. And what happened in this particular case, the people in Trinidad and Tobago were told, no, you can't run your own affairs. We're going to bring your own people. And the people of Trinidad and Tobago said, no, we don't agree with that. We're going to fight you. And they fought through their president, William Wallace. The fight itself is an extraordinary story. I think our listeners will be quite amazed at times. And it is absolutely crucial to understand how FIFA works and how FIFA keeps control on its rebels.
Well, let's hear it. You'll hear from, first of all, William Wallace, who became the president of the Trinidad and Tobago FA. He is a former school teacher. You'll hear his story. And then after that, Shaka Hislop, obviously former West Ham, Newcastle United, Trinidad and Tobago goalkeeper, but has also worked in football administration. And now an ESPN pundit will join us to talk through the William Wallace story. William, thanks so much for coming on Football Weekly. How are you?
I'm fine. And how are you?
Yeah, really good. Thank you very much. And we really appreciate your time. I think it's important to say, you know, that this story is quite complicated and the timings and the detail really matter. And a lot of our listeners are generally in the gym or going for a run or walking their dog. So this is a message to them to concentrate more than they normally do on this podcast. I will interject with very basic questions and Philippe will ask the important ones. I suppose, can we start then? Can you take us back to when you decided to run for the head of the Trinidad and Tobago FA? Why did you want to do it?
Actually, a friend of mine who was a former president of the FA, Raymond Timkey, actually, he was going to run as president, and I supported him. He had a plan that I thought was workable. He introduced me to that plan. during the period leading up to the election, Raymond got ill, and he made a decision that he would not be able to run for president. He said to me, the only person that he can trust to run in his place is my good self. And of course, it took some time for me to decide whether I want to do that or not. Being in the comfort of the Secondary Schools Football League as president at that time, having just retired from my job and looking at an organization that was basically bankrupt, I felt that is not somewhere I would want to be. That is not a task I would want to take on. But Raymond spoke with me. He in his sick days, he said to me, I have a plan. This plan can work. I looked at the plan and I thought it was workable. I thought that if all I can do, if I get into office in 4 years, if all I can do is at least make an attempt to deal with the historic debt of the FA, which was over 50 million TT dollars at that time, then that would have been a great accomplishment. And actually, he pointed out a way in that plan that we would have been able to deal with that debt. So based on that, I decided to take on the task.
And that debt's around $7.5 million, is that right?
Correct.
And just before the vote, Gianni Infantino flew into Trinidad and Tobago and told people to vote for the incumbent, John Williams, didn't he?
Well, not in those exact words, but words to that effect. He actually praised John Williams 6 days before the election. And this is an organization that one of their ideals is not to interfere with elections. But 6 days before the election, he flew into Trinidad and Tobago, along with CONCACAF president and a contingent of other persons from CONCACAF and FIFA. And he spoke highly of David John Williams. He spoke highly of the FA. You know, that the FA was basically a shining light in the region and so on. You know, and so basically at that point, it was an endorsement of David John Williams.
Do you think they saw you as a threat? Because with all due respect, like a retired school teacher going for the biggest position in football in the country, going up against someone who you thought at least had the support of Infantino. I mean, if that's the case, I would have thought that was an easy vote to win.
Of course they did. Of course they did. So it was really a surprise to them that we won the election. And at that point, and that is when the scramble started as to how they were going to treat with our win.
So, excuse me. I mean, we're used to, some people not accepting the results of votes around the world. It occasionally happens. So how soon after winning, I don't know if you were surprised that you won, but how soon after winning did FIFA basically said, did they say we're not happy that you've won?
Well, not in those words. The necessary congratulatory messages were sent from both sides, from FIFA, from CONCACAF to us. When we went into office in December, we started the support wasn't there. In January, for example, when all the other countries would have gotten their monies from FIFA, the yearly subvention, we did not receive any. And while we kept asking, and there was no reason, there was no explanation, and the office at FIFA saying that they did not understand why we didn't receive and so on. And so from that time, we realized that something was wrong and that we were not getting the kind of support that we should as a new administration.
That's so interesting. So you're speaking to one part of FIFA who just do the sort of admin and go, right, we need to send, France this amount of money and Portugal this amount of money and Australia this amount of money and Trinidad and Tobago this amount of money. And they're going, well, we should have sent you this money, but you didn't have the money because another room in FIFA had decided not to send it to you.
Correct. Exactly. As a matter of fact, they eventually did put us onto that particular person. That's one, Veron Monsingo Umba. We were told to speak with him. And after speaking with him, he said to me that no money would be coming to Trinidad and Tobago until a contingent was sent in to have a discussion with us. So no money would be sent until that happened. And we said, okay, we will wait. That contingent came into Trinidad and Tobago at the end of February, I think it was. Yes, at the end of February that they came into Trinidad and Tobago. And they met with us. We took them through everything. We actually, at that time, what we did is that we would have commissioned our finance committee to look at the operations within the organization. The organization was definitely devoid of any kind of financial mechanisms. And right. And they came up with a report, you know, a 7-page report. And when that contingent from FIFA CONCACAF came into Trinidad at the end of February, they actually said to us that one of their mandates was to look at that. And well, they didn't have to look, because we presented them with a report. We said, this is what we found when we came into office. And they were happy. They actually said to us at that time, well, this is 50% of our job completed.
So according to you, under John Williams, the TTFA had racked up this debt, which is actually, according to other reporting, something he claims he reduced during his tenure. But anyway, you won the election, you came in, found some financial issues, which you say you highlighted to FIFA. What happened next? What did they say?
Well, actually, they didn't say anything to us at that point. We were expecting a report from the visit. That did not come. And then eventually, of course, we got the communication that Trinidad and Tobago was normalized. But, you know, strangely, the two reasons given for normalizing Trinidad and Tobago, those are the reasons that had me, you know, had piqued my interest. One, the organization was devoid of any financial instruments and systems. I said, well, fine, that's true. That is exactly what we actually supplied you with that. That is one of the reasons given for normalizing. So they actually beat us with our own whip. That's one. And the second reason given was the historic debt. I said, but this is a debt that was there all the time. It was known. It was there on the when Infantino came into Trinidad and Tobago, 6 days before the election, the debt was there, you know. And if there was a problem with the lack of financial mechanisms, that should have been known also, because they do an audit every year. An audit is done, and an audit would have been done just prior to the elections. So, you know, it was strange that those were the reasons put forward, and that for me wasn't good enough.
So, William, did FIFA appoint this normalization committee? Does that mean to that you had to leave your office and go down the road? What did that actually mean practically to you?
That you are totally ousted, that these people are now in charge, and that they, of course, have the right to change the locks on the door. That's it.
And who were they?
For me, they were relatively new, and none of the three faces that were appointed were involved in football in Trinidad and Tobago at any level. So these were strangers to football in Trinidad and Tobago. The chairman of the committee, however, from what I gather, he was pretty close with the former president. I mean, FIFA definitely would not have known him. He's not involved in football in Trinidad and Tobago at any level. All three of them.
You're talking about Mr. Robert Haddad, aren't you?
Correct.
Yes. Mr. Robert Haddad, if I'm not mistaken, is the number one importer of ice cream in Trinidad and Tobago, and that's the extent of his involvement with football.
Correct.
So I hear, yes.
Correct. Well, a scoop of ice cream is kind of round like a football, I guess, isn't it? Okay, so you've been thrown out. What do you decide to do?
Well, we, having asked on many occasions FIFA to let us discuss the matter, we were willing at that point in time, if even they thought that they were supposed to sending whoever, that, you know, it would have been a better situation if they were sent in to work with the persons voted into office with the current administration. I mean, the election was fair, and there were no questions about the elections. And as a matter of fact, FIFA, they were here, they had persons who supervised the elections. And let me just back up a bit. One of the things on that also, on that communication sent to us, one of the mandates of the normalization committee is to hold elections in 2 years. You know, so my question was, okay, well, one, they could have been sent in to work with us. All right, you decide that you're going to send them in anyway, and they are we have to remove ourselves from office, or we were removed, in fact. And the second thing is that was strange is that why are they having elections in 2 years? What was wrong with the election that was held on November the 27th? You know? And all these questions are questions that I was trying to get answers for from FIFA. No answers were forthcoming. At that point, we made a decision that we would challenge the decision by FIFA. And we took our matter to CAS.
Right. And what did CAS say?
At CAS, the second part at CAS is that there is a fee that you must pay to the arbitrators. It's just about 25,000 US dollars, I think it is. And we usually what happens is that that fee is supposed to be split between FIFA and the association, whoever takes FIFA to CAS. The fee is supposed to be split between two parties. What we got from CAS in a letter to my lawyers is that FIFA decided that they are not paying the fee, and that if we have to go ahead with the case, we would have to cover all the whole cost. When we wrote to CAS to find out why FIFA wasn't paying the fees, CAS then would have written to FIFA, and FIFA wrote back to say that it is not customary for them to pay fees up front, and that if we have to go forward with the matter, of course, we have to cover the whole thing. At that point in time, we felt that we couldn't go forward. We didn't have the money to go forward in any case. And we felt that something was wrong with that. If the rules and regulations at CAS is that the two parties must split the cost, how could CAS then accept the fact that FIFA was not going to pay their half of the money? I mean, that for us was saying to us that we are going into a fight that wasn't a fair one. So in addition to that, and not being able to come up with the full with the cost of both parties, we decided that we can go forward with CAS, and the only other place that we could find justice would be in our local courts.
One point, William, when you decided to go to CAS, you could not call on the money from the FA anymore. You had no access to your bank account any longer. Is that correct?
Correct.
So you would have had to finance it directly yourselves as individuals.
Correct.
Okay, so did you have universal support in Trinidad and Tobago for taking on FIFA in your local court system? Because it's a risk, right? You're going up against football, you know?
I mean that's a good point you're making, and I think people will actually, from the start, we have persons who supported the move. Of course, there were others, which is normal in all circumstances, that we have people who support and people who did not support. Within the football fraternity, we had support. However, there came a time when the risk of being suspended was thrown out there by FIFA. They actually said to us, if you do not remove the matter from the court, that Trinidad and Tobago could face suspension. At that point in time, the fallaway started in terms of support from many of the persons who initially supported us within the football fraternity. And so there were two schools, one support and one saying that regardless of what, I mean, this is an issue that is supposed to be taken to the end, and if even we get suspended, it would have been worth it, you know? So there were two schools of thought. For us, who were directly involved, I didn't think that getting the country suspended was something that we wanted. As a matter of fact, our thinking in the onset was that we were taking on FIFA as individuals here, and that because we were described as that, the former administration, in all the communication that came to Trinidad, we were described as the former administration, the former officers. So we saw ourselves as that, and we were taking on FIFA in that capacity. However, they described us as that, but in terms of threats, they threatened the organization, you know. And eventually, of course, we know what happened with that we were suspended.
So, well, that was the point. You won the court case. Justice Scobin ruled in favor of you. And did she say Did she rule in favour of the FA then, or in favour of you as individuals? So I guess that matters.
It matters because in the court, the matter was seen as a FA matter, not right. individuals.
And did FIFA recognise that, or did FIFA not recognise that?
Well, they recognise that. They did. I must say that they did. As I said, they described us in one way, but they acted in another way when they had to treat with the situation. Prior to that, before that suspension was we wrote to FIFA. We indicated that we will be pulling the matter from the court because it was at that point that the membership asked that we pull the matter from the court. And we decided to pull the matter from the court. And we submitted the necessary documents to the courts in Trinidad and Tobago. And while the documents were being processed, we were suspended. And at that point in time, I decided to stop the process in the courts because we, in good faith, decided to pull the matter. We submitted all the paperwork to the court. FIFA would have known of that. It made international news anyway. And it was just after a holiday in Trinidad and Tobago. It did, actually, the holiday, we got this communication that we were suspended. So I decided the next day that to stop the matter from being pulled from the court, as a matter of fact.
Forgive me, because it's complicated, and I just want to make sure I'm keeping up.
It is.
So as you see it, the normalization committee comes in and says, go away. You then say, okay, we'll go to CAS. FIFA choose not to pay fees up front, which FIFA told CAS wasn't their usual process. You then realize you don't have the money yourselves, and so you do it in the High Court in Trinidad and Tobago. The court rules in your favor, and then as you see it, FIFA then turn around and say you're suspended.
Yes.
Right. So do you sort of feel like you're headbutting a brick wall by this stage and are slightly regretting ever agreeing to be any part of this?
Well, I don't think so. I actually said to myself that, you know, what we did in Trinidad and Tobago, it actually gained international exposure. And I was just hoping that other countries would have seen, something is wrong here. I mean, I'm talking about the football fraternity. We wrote to every single nation. We sent all the communication, all the letters out to every single nation. That was leading up to FIFA's Congress. We thought they were going to act at the Congress, all right, in terms of the suspension. And all 216 countries got our communication, explained to them what happened, the whole thing. And we were hoping that, we'd have gotten some traction from the football fraternity. But of course, everybody is in their little hole, and you got calls from some people saying that, well, they support you, but they can't come out in the open to say that because they're afraid they wrote to FIFA. You know, we have a situation in the US at this point in time that is very, very, it's almost similar to that, People who are saying, that we do not support what you are doing, but we can't say it to the public. But for me, having done this, I think that somewhere down the road that this would bear some fruit in that certain things would change in terms of how FIFA do their business. I'm just hoping.
Why do you think, because seen from the outside, it looks like it's fairly vindictive what FIFA did. Why is it you think that FIFA had it in for you? It seems from the very beginning. What are the reasons why they would literally attack you in that particular fashion?
We think that all this was done so that some of the things that we may have discovered, if we had continued in terms of forensic audit, etc., that some of those things would not be exposed so that they were covering for their man in Trinidad and Tobago.
So I've got a couple more questions. One is, can Trinidad and Tobago, are they playing football still? Are they involved in competitions? And what's your personal situation then?
Well, the suspension was lifted. The suspension was lifted, and the team is now being preparing for the World Cup qualifiers. Our first game is in March. March. So the football is happening. That's one. My situation is that I have I'm looking on at the moment. I have pulled back and I'm looking on at what is happening at the moment. The normalization committee is being questioned even as we speak about lack of communication and so on. Not talking to stakeholders, running the association as a private entity and so on. And that is happening at the moment. And we are just looking on.
Do you think FIFA cares about football fans and about the development of young footballers?
I think FIFA, in terms of these small islands especially, I don't think that FIFA, it doesn't matter to FIFA. It doesn't really matter in terms of the football. Because if we are talking football, there was an administration that we were ranked probably about 54th in the world when that administration took over. And at the end of that four-year period, we were 106th or 7th. So we moved on the rank in all the teams. And for me, as administrators in football, the core product is football. Everything else comes after. And if FIFA care about football, then that would have mattered, that you had an administration under them. Our ranking moved from 54th in the world to 106. Then something has to be wrong. But that is the same administration that you are fighting for, that you are supporting. So how could you really care about football in these territories? You care, of course, about your interests, which you have other interests in the territories, because at the end of the day, for you to remain in power, you need support. And the Caribbean, the CFU, they play a great part in terms of any president staying in power, because you're talking between CFU and CONCACAF. You're talking what, 42 countries, so 42 votes. So you know that we are important in that respect. Politically, we are very important, and that is one of the reasons I think also that they supported the John Williams regime, because John Williams did support President Infantino. He actually, the normal thing in CFU is that the CFU would meet and make a decision as to who they would support in the election. And in that election that Infantino ran in, John Williams broke ranks with CFU before the meeting. And he actually invited Infantino, who came to Trinidad and Tobago, and he openly supported Infantino.
Were you aware at the time when you initiated the action in the High Court that you were throwing a challenge that FIFA had never received before, and that what you were actually challenging was the right of FIFA to rule the game on a global basis? Were you aware of that? Because it's something that came out in the judgment of Justice Gobin, which is one thing, actually, many lawyers and people specializing in football regulations, governance, really took notice of that. She was basically saying, oh, well, FIFA doesn't have a right to rule everybody and everything. And it's a thing that FIFA had never heard before. Do you think they were also really afraid of you because of that? Or do you think that they would win in the end?
Well, I mean, if in terms of one of the communications that we saw that came to Mr. Haddad then, that he sent to me. Actually, they sent communications to him and asked him to forward to us. And one of the things that they question is that we were interfering with the governance of the world governance of football. Actually, by our action, we were interfering with governance in football, international governance in football. I mean, I think that was a very frightening thing for them. That if we were able to win out at the end of the day here, that this would have affected how football is governed throughout the world, and the control would have been taken away from them. And this was not a very pleasant thought for them, because I mean, we things like normalization, for example, this is being used as a weapon. It is weaponized. You know, you could get up any morning and decide that based on whatever circumstances that you deem to be necessary for coming into a country, you decide on that and you come into the country. There are no clear guidelines as to if you do this or you do that, we can send in a normalization committee. It is that FIFA decide what the reason is or the rationale for sending in a normalization. There's a very, very vague legislation in their constitution, very 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 vague. So it is left open to be used by any regime from FIFA as they see fit. And you know, and in this case, it was a very good example of that, that we can use this as a weapon against a nation, which is very sad. And, you know, and that is my point. I am saying that other nations, I mean, especially the smaller ones, I guess, have to think about that, you know, because what is exceptional circumstances? You know, somebody comes to you and say that, under exceptional circumstances, I would do this to you. You don't know what those exceptional circumstances are. Those circumstances are decided by that post. So anything that they deem to be exceptional, they can use that. And that is what is in FIFA rules, and countries around the world have accepted that, you know, which is for me, is really giving somebody power over you in a way where you don't have a chance.
And do you have any aspirations to be the head of the FA again?
After what I went through, after what when I look at our football fraternity here, and what they are willing to accept and what they are willing to stand up for, I don't think I want to be part of that. Definitely not. I saw people who were actually groveling and saying that we would go back to FIFA and bend the knees and beg and so on. And I don't think that is some. I want to be around people like that. I think I want to be around people who can stand up for something when it matters. And I don't think that we have those persons in football at the moment in Trinidad.
William, I think that was so interesting and depressing at the same time, actually. But fair play to you for going, you know, for taking them on. William Wallace there speaking to me and Philippe a few weeks ago now, and we thank him for his time again. We will, of course, be putting the allegations made by William to FIFA before this episode airs. And in part three, we'll speak to Shaka Hislop. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. And let's welcome former West Ham, Newcastle, Trinidad, Tobago goalkeeper Shaka Hislop, ESPN pundit. It's a long title, Shaka, so let me get through everything that you've achieved. With perhaps more relevance to this story, or just as much, a member of Trinidad and Tobago's FA's Independent Reform Commission in 2015. You served on IFAB between 2014 and 2016 as well. Thanks so much for coming on. We appreciate it.
It was my pleasure, absolutely.
Actually, the last time I saw you play was I was behind the goal when England played Trinidad and Tobago in the World Cup in 2006.
Okay.
And your fans were brilliant. And actually, we were probably pretty lucky to win that game, weren't we?
Yeah, yes, you were. And as it turned out, Max, that's the last time I represented Trinidad and Tobago.
Is that right?
So maybe you're the jinx.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry about that. Listen, we heard from William Wallace on what happened. I've heard you referring to it as a coup. What do you mean by that?
I felt it was a foreign body, albeit FIFA in this instance, coming into a sovereign nation and basically overthrowing a democratically elected president. It's in footballing terms, so maybe coup is being a little bit dramatic. But for somebody who has spent their life in football and the game has given them so much, that was my initial feeling. That's the impact that it had on me and my own opinions and feelings about the game, particularly locally.
And how did that make you feel?
It was hard to accept, and still is, and very hard to digest. Now, keep in mind, for the bulk of my own playing career, it was under the tutelage, for want of a better term, of Jack Warner. I know what that meant to me personally, and in my own opinion, the effects, the negative effects it had on the wider game in Trinidad and Tobago and regionally. I was hoping that we'd be able to move past that. And I knew that was never going to be an easy or a short process. But I felt we needed to have that time to grow up as an administration. and that was snatched away from us. Listen, there's a lot I can point to, and I'm sure we get to both positively and negatively. Not just with William Wallace and his short time in charge, but David John Williams, Raymond Timke. That's part of moving past Jack Warren, and I thought that was denied to us.
Check out, I mean, what happens still, I mean, because your new regime, so to speak, only lasted, what, November to March, then was replaced by a normalization committee. But they refused to back down. And actually, the administration took FIFA to court, to the Supreme Court, and won its case before being actually having an appeal against them a bit later on. But when that happened, when you heard that the Trinidad FA, Trinidad and Tobago FA, was going to fight FIFA in the courts in Trinidad and Tobago, do you feel that, did you think they had a chance? And also, did you think that they had the support of the local community, the local football community?
Well, I'll answer the last part first. I think the support was split right down the middle. 50% thought, listen, this is FIFA's game. You don't challenge FIFA in their own game. And 50%, and I fall into this latter 50%, feels that you stand up for what's right, regardless of who that is up against. That's how I felt. And a lot of the same criticism that the William Wallace administration faced, a lot of the criticism that I heard is exactly what we heard when the players decided to take Jack Warner to court for unpaid bonuses back in 2006. And just for a little bit of a backstory on that, my dad was a teacher in London in the mid-60s, wrongfully arrested by the police. Him and his friend Desmond Allam, who as it turns out was in law school at the time, took the Metropolitan Police to court and won. So if we can take Jack Warner to court in 2006, if my dad and his friend Desmond Allam, two young black Trinidad men, can take the Metropolitan Police to court in mid-60s Britain, I don't see why you don't stand up for your right in this instance, in 2020, as it was. That for me, just, it's not part of my DNA. I can't explain it any other way. Listen, I understand those who feel differently, but that's just not part of my DNA. I don't understand it and can't begin to explain it.
And they won.
They won.
In all three of those instances, they won. Yes.
FIFA would point to the fact that the Court of Appeal in Trinidad and Tobago in October last year overturned that verdict and said that...
My understanding of that ruling was they overturned it because they felt the Trinidad and Tobago High Court was the wrong court to hear that, and it needed to go to CAS. But William Wallace administration tried to do that.
Do you think FIFA didn't want William Wallace there? And if you think that, why do you think that?
I don't think FIFA wanted William Wallace there, and I think there's more than enough evidence to show that. I've always felt, and this is more personal feeling, that they had something to hide, and I'm not quite sure what it was.
Sure. And FIFA would deny all of that, obviously.
Of course they would, and understandably, yes, they would. But I don't understand how the FIFA president, who we'll assume speaks for FIFA as a wider body, comes into Trinidad in November 2019, declares what David John Williams is doing as president of the Trinidad and Tobago Football Association as being a huge success, and then 3 months later, before William Wallace could even pull his chair up to the table properly, decide that everything that he inherited warrants the need for FIFA to normalize. I'm not sure the disconnect. Either Infantino wasn't speaking for FIFA and then say that, or something's amiss. And as far as far as I can tell, again, I'm just a regular Jew looking from the outside, I have to assume that Gianni Infantino was speaking for FIFA.
Philippe, you know, FIFA has normalised other FAs.
Yeah.
Argentina, Egypt, Namibia, that's a big list. Recently, like
Ivory
Haiti,
Coast, Cameroon.
Ivory Coast.
Yes,
but Comoros. Like, for example, in Haiti, it's been for kind of important and legitimate reasons, you know, which Ed Ahrens has covered brilliantly in The Guardian. We're going to cover on a pod soon that story. Why is this one different?
What is different is that there's the question of the timing. There's the question as well of how you use normalization committees. It's not a very sexy phrase, is it? But it is one of the most important instruments which is at the disposal of FIFA. And to understand why that's the case, why it is so controversial, if you read the FIFA statuses, and I've got them in front of me, it says, the article 8.2, executive bodies of member associations may, under exceptional circumstances, be removed from office by the council in consultation with the relevant confederation and replaced by a normalization committee for a specific period of time. Now, what does that mean beyond the legalese? The executive bodies of member associations, they're the FAs. The council, it's basically the presidents of confederations and Mr. Infantino. And so the relevant confederation in this case was CONCACAF. So basically, Mr. Infantino, together with the heads of the confederations, decided that the Trinidad and Tobago FA was in such a poor state that they had to move in, and that this constituted exceptional circumstances. Now, the thing is that the exceptional circumstances weren't met. That would be what my point would be, is that they had been elected only in November. This happened on 17th March, normalization. It went very fast. Sometimes it goes much more slowly. And you take the example of Haiti. Haiti, it took a much longer time to happen, believe me. So it is basically an instrument of power which is supposed to be almost used like the ultimate deterrent, the ultimate measure which you use when there are no other recourses available.
I asked this on the previous pod we did on this subject when we spoke to Miguel Maduro, which is, you know, half of our audience is in the UK, half is around the world. I don't have the exact numbers for Trinidad and Tobago listeners that we have. But why should fans in the UK care?
Fans in the UK, well, just kind of a cliche I've been using for the last 12 months, and injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. I was using it in a different context, but I think it still applies here. I think there's also a wider issue around confederations and the manipulation of power. And that kind of going leans into CONCACAF. And now, full disclaimer here, this is just my own feeling and interpretation of some of the facts that I've been presenting and just looking at the timelines. But keep in mind that in CONCACAF, 35 of the voting membership is Caribbean, are members of the Caribbean Football Union. The Caribbean can dictate who the next CONCACAF president is. As it sits, it's Canadian Victor Montagliani. Keep in mind that the United States, Canada, and Mexico are hosting the 2026 World Cup, and CONCACAF elections were upon us. What the stripping of William Wallace's power also did, it sent a message to the rest of the Caribbean Football Union that if you go against us in any single way, we will come down on you with a very heavy hand. And given all that was at stake with the 2026 World Cup and Victor Montagliani, I also wonder if it was more than just about getting their own man in position or covering up something, you know, sinister financially that may have been going on and had been alleged. I think there's a far bigger picture to this here, which again then leans into who hosts the 2030 World Cup and 2034 and the lessons learned, albeit in a tiny corner of the footballing world.
And do you think actually, because this is what we discussed on the last part, is it's almost the structure is a bigger problem than the individuals. So that even I feel like I'm a nice guy. You seem nice. I know Philippe's nice. Like, if the three of us went in there to run FIFA, we would fall foul of the structure as well.
Yeah, and listen, it's in business, and not just football, business, culture is a difficult thing to break. So when you have the culture within an organization be as toxic or as toxic as it is, and certainly you would seen in the Sepp Blatter years, and Jack Warner was a product, if not a contributor to that, coming in and just changing the nameplates on the door doesn't necessarily mean that culture is going to be altered any. And I think that's what you saw.
And you say your glass half full. How full is your glass currently? And you know, how much hope do you have?
Well, how big is my glass? It's still half full. Listen, I have a really simple philosophy around football, and it's because I've lived every aspect of it. I think football, if not sport, has the ability to empower the least of us, has an ability to give each of us reason to dream. And I feel that the game has to continue to serve that. So while I complain about FIFA at its head and some of the decisions that it makes, I applaud what happens within the FIFA Foundation and how they work with organizations all around the world in providing opportunities for young boys and girls the world over. And I say I've lived every aspect of that, you know, and I mean that sincerely. Without the game, I was a very awkward young man but was able to find my confidence. It was through the game that I was able to get an education through a soccer scholarship in the United States. It was through the game that I was able to live my wildest boyhood dreams and playing professionally and representing Trinidad on the World Cup stage. I have lived every promise that the game affords us. And I firmly believe that ultimately is the game's primary calling, not about producing teams that play wonderful football or play in the World Cup. That's a byproduct of the game's primary calling.
Shaka, listen, thanks so much for coming on. I feel like I want you to give me a motivational speech every morning. That's what I'd like. Appreciate you coming on. And look, you know, we'll definitely catch up with you again as this story progresses, if that's cool with you.
Absolutely, of course it is. Absolutely. Look forward to that.
Brilliant. Philippe, thank you as always.
Thank you very much, Max. And thank you very much, Shaka.
As promised, we went to FIFA with the allegations made by William Wallace and during the panel with Shaka. A FIFA spokesperson told us, quote, since 2016 and the reform process that has taken place since, every FIFA member association is now subject to the highest standards of financial governance, including the obligation to provide regular financial reporting and undergo mandatory audits on an annual basis. Following a rule by FIFA, CONCACAF and external experts, FIFA told us that, quote, in the case of TTFA, this process uncovered serious concerns regarding the financial situation at the organization and indications of financial mismanagement there. It was at this point that the FIFA Council decided to appoint a normalization committee with a key part of their mandate to, quote, apply corrective measures and secure the financial future of the organization. FIFA told us that once the complete facts were made known, quote, the full membership of the TTFA met independently from FIFA and voted to withdraw the case taken by the former leadership in the local courts against the installation of the normalization committee and to recognize the authority of this body. According to FIFA, quote, the former TTFA leadership failed to respect the democratic wishes of the TTFA membership, instead choosing to undermine the stability of football organization and governance in Trinidad and Tobago by continuing to challenge these efforts to address the situation via local courts. The spokesperson said that, quote, FIFA accepts that the former leadership of the TTFA may challenge any decision. However, this must be done in accordance with the FIFA statutes, a fact which has been confirmed by the decision of the Court of Appeal of Trinidad and Tobago. FIFA finished by reiterating its firm stance that questionable financial practices are behind them and told us that, quote, all members must adhere to proper financial management and sound governance principles in order to be part of the football community. There is a zero tolerance policy to any departure from this approach to ensure that the mistakes of the past are not repeated. We also reached out to David John Williams with some of the allegations directly aimed at him. He did get back to us, but refused to comment until he'd heard the full audio from the episode. Finally, we also reached out to the chairperson of the TTFA Normalisation Committee, Mr. Robert Haddad, who, as at time of recording, was yet to respond. Thanks for listening. Especially thanks to listening for all those statements. We'll be back tomorrow.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.